Hello, and welcome to Life Beyond the Numbers, the podcast for people who are curious about how to have a more fulfilling work life. We live in a world largely driven by numbers, logic, and reason. But how we feel at work and about our work impacts us, our organizations, and society. There is a relationship between the numbers of our organizations and the life beyond the numbers. I'm Susan Mikhrylon, your host. I've lived and worked in many countries. I've met people who love what they do and people who don't, people who bring their full selves to work and people who won't. But one thing that I've learned that is common to us all is that we are all unique and have unique experiences. And it's helpful to know that there are others who think like we do, or have had struggles too, or have gone where we want to go, or can show us things we didn't know. So join me and my guests as we place a lens on the human side of work life by sharing insights, stories, and strategies to inspire you to let your uniqueness shine. Today, I am really, really happy to welcome Helen Joy back again to Life Beyond the Numbers. Helen, you're so welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a delight to be back again. Yes. Very exciting.
So today we're going to talk about something that I think most organizations, it's high on their radar. So if you're in a workplace, this is probably something you hear a lot about, and that is the subject of innovation. Before we started recording, I was looking at the World Economic Forum and what they say are the top skills for 2023. They haven't released 2024 yet. Creative thinking is way up there. Analytical thinking. And I think all of those things probably come into innovation. But Helen, what is innovation?
And that's such a brilliant question, because we have this interpretation that innovation and creativity have to be these big, arty, engineering, enormous things. I've been guilty myself for years of going, oh, I'm not creative because I can't sing and I can't dance and I can't draw and I can't play piano and all those things. And actually, creativity and innovation aren't about, yes, of course, they are those things. But actually, in terms of in the workplace these days, innovation is about the ability to think differently. It's the ability to look at problems, challenges, issues, and solve them in different ways than that linear process that we've been taught or we've learned how to do. It's just about thinking differently. And yes, of course, it feeds into the creating new, different, better ways for your customers, for your clients, however you refer to them, and continuously improving how they receive your services or your products or whatever it is you deliver for them. But it's something that should be part and parcel of every single interaction that we have. And it's a mindset for me more than necessarily an output.
And as you're talking there, I'm thinking, it's in every interaction almost, because every single person has their own way of thinking already, because we all already think differently. Yet a lot of us will perhaps make our thinking conform or not say what we're thinking. So what stops us from being innovative if it's actually very easy for us?
I don't think it is necessarily very easy for a lot of people, because they've been shut down. They've been made to conform. They've been told this is a stupid idea. Well, that would never work. You know, that kind of environment just it stops people from allowing their brains to be as innovative and as creative as they can. And for me, what that fundamentally comes down to is a lack of psychological safety in the workplace. Because when we feel safe, when we feel that we can speak up, we can share, we can vocalize those ideas without fear of judgment, humiliation, being told we're failures, being told that it's a mistake. When we can do those things, and even if it's not going to work perfectly the first time, or it's not right, that we don't feel judged and punished for that, that's when we'll allow ourselves to be more innovative.
Okay, so we've got another term here, psychological safety. So maybe you'll speak to that a little bit first, because it's something that we hear a lot about, psychological safety, but like, what is it? How do I know if I'm in a psychologically safe environment or not?
Well, so psychological safety has been in the lexicon since 1999, I think, when Amy Edmondson coined the term. I've been talking about it in leadership and management development for 20 years. It's amazing that it is now coming into the mainstream. And I think COVID brought it a lot more to mind, because suddenly where people were at home and isolated and all of those things, I think there was this sudden recognition that our psychological safety is as important as our physical safety. And the quote and the definition from Amy Edmondson that for me kind of does sum it up is that it's the belief that you won't be punished or humiliated for speaking up with ideas, questions, concerns, or sharing mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, that says it all. But I think what you can have is perhaps teams in organizations that will have psychological safety, but for a whole organization, unless it's quite small, it's probably quite a difficult thing to do. How do you start it off almost? Because we go to work, maybe not our first job. When we go into work in our first job, we might get shut down. But by the time we got to the second job, we've learned. And even if we go in somewhere to a new organization, we might think it's not okay to speak up, even if it is. So how do you know it's there? Or how do you start it? Or how do you maintain?
It all has to start somewhere, doesn't it? And for me, it starts on an individual basis. And because I work with that middle management layer, for me, they have the biggest influence and impact on people's relationship with their employer, with their work. And that flows back into how they are at home. And it has always been one of the top five reasons that people leave their job is their relationship with their manager. Because if that is poor, that impacts, there's a 70% variance, I think, with Gallup data. I'm never quite sure what that actually means when they say variance like that, but basically it's big. It has a massive impact. And it's really, really interesting, because I was with an organization earlier this week. They're a lovely organization. They have this in spades, you know, all the people I've interacted with. They might not know the term psychological safety as a term, but they create that. The relationships they have, they're a delight to be with. And what was really interesting was that somebody, and this has come up before with them, one of the big issues they have is people who come into the business who are scared. And they're scared because of their previous experiences. And it takes them time to trust and believe that they can come up with wild ideas. They can ask questions. They can admit to making mistakes. They can share concerns that they've got. And they will not be punished. They will not be judged. They will be supported. And I can't tell you how, after 20 years of working in this environment, to be in a room where this comes up as an issue from that perspective, how amazingly satisfying that is, that the world is shifting. For me, it starts at middle manager level, the relationship you have with your teams, both up and down, and then your manager's relationship with their management team. And it's individuals. We can all decide to create a psychologically safe environment for our people and our teams if we want to. It was a very long answer.
It wasn't really. It's not that it wasn't. There's a lot in it. And I love what you said about how that organization that they're coming at it from that angle, that actually they recognize, because it was the question I asked and I had no idea either. So it is fascinating because I think we do get conditioned, and even in school, we speak when we have permission to speak. So we maybe even at home, we might not always feel psychologically safe in the home environment or the school environment or the university environment. So actually, by the time we get to work, it can just keep going that way. So if I'm looking for a new job and I get a good feeling about this organization and I kind of go, wow, this is where I can blossom, because I guess that's the output of being in that kind of environment. How do you then adapt the mindset when you arrive in that I'm going to approach this differently to the job I left, which was awful?
I think that depends on the individual, doesn't it? Because some people will dive straight into that. Some people will go, oh, this is what I've been looking for. This is the environment. And now I'm here. I will pour myself wholeheartedly into this. And I will trust because I'm a naturally more trusting person. I would be that person. I would be the one going, Nirvana, I'm here. And then after about 6 months, get irritated by little tiny things because I'm human. But then I think there are other people who are further down that spectrum and that scale who would be skeptical, who would be thinking, well, it's too good to be true. Well, they're saying all the right things. And even though it feels different, I'm going to be more cautious and I'm going to be more skeptical. I'm going to test them. I'm going to do little tiny steps. And I think that's where, as a manager, it's recognizing where on that scale that individual is. Because sometimes those managers who genuinely always create this environment naturally, because some people do, they're just fantastic at it. And they would naturally just understand and guide that person step by step by step. People to whom it doesn't come as naturally, but want to be able to do it, may find that that skepticism causes a bit of frustration for them, because they find that, well, I'm giving you everything that I've been told I've got to give you. Why aren't you giving it back to me? And I think that sometimes is where the friction starts and where it can start to go wrong, because we spend a lot of time talking to people about this, and we spend a lot of time shifting people's mindsets so that they understand how much better it is for everybody when people feel able to be themselves and to share whatever and say what comes out of their mouth, as long as the intent's right, without fear of any kind of negativity. And I think you do get managers that go, right, well, I'll try that. And I've had it in a room where people go, well, okay, I'll give it a go. And they go off and they go, well, I asked them and they didn't respond, so that doesn't work, does it? And it's that bit of going of digging and finding out, well, okay, how did you try it? How many times did you try it? What was the environment that you tried it in? What was the situation that you tried it in? How and why do you think they may have responded that way? And having to explain to people that you've got to build that trust. It's not just about trust, but trust is the foundation, because without that trust, they're not going to believe that they're not going to be punished or judged.
Absolutely. And it's back to practice, isn't it? It is always so interesting how we think if we hear about a new skill or a new way of being, like psychological safety, for example, or even innovation, that we can just turn it on. It's like a tap.
Oh, flick that switch now. I
Yeah.
can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. When
Yeah.
actually, like anything we do, whether it's learning to drive or learning to use a computer or whatever, it takes a bit of practice. We don't just sail into it. And I always struggle with that, how we think, well, with technical stuff, we know we're going to have to put the practice in. But with everything else, we kind of think we're the finished article.
It is, and you know, when you think about when we deliver coaching training and we give people lots of opportunity to coach, because when you talk about a model, it's really simple, self-explanatory, makes absolute sense. And then off you go and you give people time to practice it. And then you sit them down and you go, how was that? And they go, that was really hard. It is, because it's a different mindset. It's a different way of doing it. You're having to do the, it's not automatic yet. And it's the unconscious competence thing, isn't it? And it's funny, whenever I talk about psychological safety with people, I want to talk about delegation with people and stuff like that. It's very much around reminding people of those stages of unconscious competence, because when we don't know what we don't know, we're merrily bobbing along.
Or not so merrily.
Well, yeah. Causing carnage and chaos everywhere. And then we discover that actually there is a different way of doing something. And now we know that we don't know what we're doing. And then we can go through shame, and we go through fear, and we can go through panic. And then we get to that mindset shift of, okay, well, I want to be good at this. And then there's that conscious incompetence, which is when you're driving, okay, I've now got to do six things at once, and but I'm starting to get better at them. And some of these are starting to become natural. And then we get to that point where we've driven home and not actually remembered half the landmarks because we're just doing it on autopilot, which I'm not recommending, by the way, just to be clear. But it's that whole thing, is like you say, we expect that we're going to get in a car and we're going to be able to drive straight away because it's a feelings, emotion, person, human thing. We should be able to just get it, but it takes practice and time and kindness to ourselves when we don't get it right.
Yeah, and there was a guest that I had on some time back, and before we got into our conversation, we had a conversation like I do with most guests, and one of the things this person said was that in their organization there's almost a mandate now that every team is psychologically safe. Now, we didn't talk about it on air for a very good reason. Can you do that, Helen? Can you tell the organization and the managers that they have to create psychologically safe environments?
We can tell them what you want, but whether they can actually deliver it or not is a completely different matter, isn't it? If you think about big organizations, I've got a friend who used to work for a supermarket chain and had a terrible experience working there. I have another friend who worked for the same supermarket chain, but in a completely different part of the organization, who had an absolutely incredible time there. And it's to do with the departments that they're in, it's to do with the teams that they're in, it's to do with the managers that they've got and that management hierarchy in that department, team, function, whatever. And you can want to change your organization to become psychologically safe at all levels, but not everybody in the positions that can influence that will have the capability or the desire to do that. And so if you're going to mandate something, you have to create the environment for that, and you have to have some difficult conversations with people who may not fit culturally or even add culturally the environment that you want to create. I've worked in big organizations where I've had incredible teams, where I've been so lucky and I've loved my job and I've loved what I've gone in to do every day, but completely passionate about it. I've also worked in other parts of that business and felt the complete opposite to that. And I was lucky that I got to move sideways, because I had friends in other parts of the organization that I could talk to. The problem we've got is a lot of people in a lot of organizations just walk away from the whole environment because it becomes so toxic for them. They can't imagine they could ever have a better experience anywhere else. And that's the challenge for organizations, is that your brand is forever stained with that perception. And what do we talk to people about most? Our awful experiences.
Well, totally. The link between innovation and psychological safety, is that something that people are aware of, really? And I'm just thinking back to a job I had, and that's what's coming into my head now, as I was in this organization that was, even though my team, there was psychological safety in it for sure, from the leadership side of things, there just wasn't. It was a very psychologically unsafe environment. And yet we were always in groups getting together to be innovative. And it never worked, funnily enough. But because you're in that, it's like a catch 22. When you're not in a psychologically safe environment, you cannot explain to leadership why there's no innovation. So it's chicken and egg or catch 22. What do you do in that situation? If you're in charge of being innovative for a department and there's no environment for that.
If you are responsible for that department, you're responsible for the psychological safety in that department. And that's where you've got to start. If that innovation is not happening, you've got to absolutely understand why. And that might, if there's no psychological safety, that might be really hard to do because nobody is going to tell you the brutal, honest truth for fear of the punishment, the judgment, the ridicule, all of those things. So where you've got to start, you've got to go right back to the beginning then, and you've got to nurture those relationships one-on-one and create that trust so that you can build on top of that trust, that psychological safety. And the only way you can do that is by creating situations where you can prove and evidence your trustworthiness. And that will be different for everybody, and that takes time. And that's the problem you get sometimes in organizations, is the people who are put into those positions to do that are not given the time to create the environment where people can feel psychologically safe so they can even tell you that's been the problem or where the problem actually is. Because sometimes it can be one individual in a team that can completely undermine and ruin everything. As a leader in there, you should be able to spot that. If you sit in a room and you are watching these people interact with each other and you're watching who's doing the talking, who's obviously got things they want to say, but they don't. Looking at the different ways that those ideas are brought into that room for a start. Is it the case that everyone writes their ideas down and somebody else is responsible for them and people don't have to own up to the ideas? But it's that whole bit of just observing what is happening, identifying the behaviors that are undermining that psychological safety and dealing with that first and foremost, because it doesn't matter how well you build these relationships, if that behavior is still enabled and allowed, people will never get beyond that. And then they'll walk because they'll go, well, I told you that that was the problem. And that's the challenge, is that if you don't have the time to do that, or you don't deal with the problem straight away, you will never create the psychological safety you need to create the innovation for your team to continue to do what it needs to do. And what will happen is you get a churn of leaders who go through the same process.
And that reminds me of an organization where one of the leaders in the organization, that team did not have psychological safety at all. But that team leader, director, was bringing in lots of customers and clients. So they were able to bring in the money, and therefore nobody wanted to do anything about that particular person. But then you just had complete turnaround of staff, because no one wants to stay working there.
Yeah.
So
And
you're leaving a lot of value, I think, unrealized value, and really all you're going to do is churn out crap when you could actually really change the world.
yeah. Oh, you know, when I worked in recruitment, there was one particular team, one office that had a salesperson who was billing probably £250,000 a year. So that's quite a lot of money for one individual. But they were toxic, and they stole all the great clients, and they lied, and they trampled all over their colleagues and their teammates, had no respect for anyone else, and really thought they were the big I am, because they had been lauded and applauded for years for being amazing. And they got a new manager because nobody else in the team could bill more than £60,000 a year, which is not enough in that environment in a big city. And when they got this new manager in, they spent that time, they observed and they saw the behaviors, and they spent time getting to know the rest of the team and recognizing what they could bring, what they had, why they didn't perform to the levels they should be doing. And eventually the feedback, I mean, they'd spotted that this person was the problem. And but the feedback eventually started to come through that actually was, or these were some of the backhanded sly things they were doing. And they started the process to manage the performance of this individual, not on results, but on behaviours. And they got a lot of pushback from a senior level. Well, what are you doing? If you lose them, but they'd had this massive churn in the rest of the business, in the rest of the team. Nobody got past 9 months. This person was like, well, I've been told I've got to do what I've got to do to get this. And this is, if they can't change their behaviours. And this person eventually left because they didn't understand that their behaviours were wrong. They didn't understand the impact they were having on the rest of the team. They felt that everything they were doing was right because they thought about themselves. And they eventually left because they didn't feel valued and they went off somewhere else. And within 6 months, the performance levels of the rest of that team had obliterated that £250,000 that that one individual was bringing in. And it was an environment and a team that everybody wanted to join. And the feedback they started getting from the clients from this person as well, which was, well, we absolutely hated him, but he found us the right candidates. And certainly in sales environments, that kind of behavior still is, people can't see beyond the money and can't numbers. See. This is it. They can't see beyond the numbers attached to that person's head. And they don't see the potential. It's exactly as you said, the money they're leaving on the table. Because when you recruit someone, and the latest research I saw said that it costs 200% of that person's salary to replace them.
Exactly. So if you added up all of those people that were leaving, that £250,000 was gone to a loss just because of one person. And it's fascinating, isn't it? That's the thing about numbers, is you can make them do whatever you want them to do. And if you're not interested in what they could tell you, then you always have to look at what's going on beyond those numbers. And that £250,000 just blinded everybody. And that really is very short-sighted. From what you've just said.
Yeah.
So when there's no psychological safety, there's almost no point. You're going to do business as usual, but if there's no psychological safety in an organization, Helen, like, what's their future?
It's pretty bleak, really, because you know, every business needs the people that come in, do their job and go home, because not everybody can progress, and not everybody wants to, and that's why it works. But there's a difference between people coming in, being proud of the work that they're delivering, doing their very, very best every single day, and going home and leaving it behind. And those people that turn up, don't put their effort in, don't care. And eventually, if you end up with a team full of people that don't care, that are only in it for themselves, that don't contribute in the way that you need them to contribute in order to get the innovation, in order to keep up with your competitors, in order to create better services and offerings for your clients and customers, you stagnate. And in the current economic climate, you cannot afford to stagnate. In any economic climate, you can't afford to stagnate, because the world moves at a pace now that we've never seen. And if you can't keep exciting your customers or being there for your customers in different ways and delivering everything that they want and need and creating psychological safety for your customers with their relationship with you, and if you've not got that internally, that's going to feed through. You're going to have staff that don't care. You're going to have staff that come in, do a job, go home.
And well, they're disengaged, effectively.
The numbers plummet. Yeah.
And I was just thinking there as well that I suspect that some leaders, their response to that would be to make it competitive, to pit people against each other and to incentivize, because we all are motivated by money. So if there's somebody listening to us now thinking, well, that's exactly what I was going to do, what would you say?
A massive eye roll.
Yeah. How's that strategy going to work?
Well, it'll work for some people. Of course it will, because there are people who are competitive, and they're not all necessarily driven by money, but there's some people who are very competitive. But again, the problem with competitive environments, if you don't have psychological safety, is that it becomes every man for himself. A woman, everyone for themselves. And that just breeds that toxicity, because people get left behind and people disengage and people get demotivated. And if you are never going to be able to reach that particular number, you just disconnect and you end up with the same issue. You can have competitive environments that are psychologically safe. Absolutely. But that takes a lot more work. That takes a lot of effort. That takes a lot of monitoring, a lot of making sure that everybody gets what that competition is trying to achieve, what the outputs are, why are you doing this? And actually what happens for those people that don't win? And I know it's not suggesting that it's like primary school sometimes where you get a sticker for taking part. You know, it's not about that, but it's about feeling that you are valued, feeling that you bring something to that organization, that your input is listened to, it's heard, it's considered. It might not be taken on, but there'll be an understanding of why that happened, and you will know that you are comfortable to come up with another idea. And Nick, oh God, who's the light bulb person? I use this all the time.
I'm no Einstein, it wasn't. He did everything else though.
I was like, Nikola Tesla, no, not that one. Thomas Edison.
Yes.
The confidence was not there, was it? Thomas Edison. How did it feel failing 10,000 times? Because I didn't. I just found 9,999 ways that didn't work. And that's the mentality and mindset that you want in your business. That it's just finding ways that things don't work. It is not failure. It is not a mistake. If you want innovation in your organization, you have to have people who are free to create the wildest, most absurd suggestions and ideas. Because do you know what? When you do that, sometimes there's a tiny kernel of something that sets off in somebody else's mind that takes you down a completely different set of things. How many times have we had conversations, or either one of us had conversations with other people, that something has come up that is totally unrelated to something that we're subconsciously chewing on, and suddenly there's that moment of, oh, that's that. And it might
the light bulb moment.
It's that creative, that ability to be able to throw things, ideas, suggestions, thoughts, comments out there, free from fear of judgment, punishment, humiliation, all of those things. If you can create that in your team, I say the organization I was in this week, you've got a thing of beauty, and you have got something that is rare, unfortunately, in this world. Not as rare as it used to be, thank God, but you become such an employer of choice. People want to work with you. People then don't want to leave. Massive issues with retention in so many organizations. Massive costs to hiring new people who then have to learn everything about your business. You lose all that institutional memory. And you need fresh blood. You need fresh ideas. Of course you do. But we also need those people that are the absolute core and engine of our business, who they've got to feel just as valued. Because again, the people on the front line, the people talking to your customers and your clients every day, they know what the problems your customers and clients are having. They know the challenges. They know what hacks them off. They know what's going to make them leave to competitor. Those people have got to feel just as able to come up with different creative thoughts and ideas as your marketing department, as your R&D department, as your whatever name you've given to your ideas people. You need an environment where everybody can contribute without fear or favour.
Absolutely. And that the collective intelligence, because once our brainwaves sync up with one another, and if we're feeling safe and they do that, that's how you build rockets to the moon and things like that. Okay, we could say that some of the companies that are doing things like that might not be the best example either of psychological safety, but they probably started out like that. They probably started out because it was a bunch of friends getting together and...
Yeah.
Yeah, but the collective intelligence, I think you talked about building trust. You build trust to build psychological safety, which builds or allows innovation, which is building momentum. And if you have collective intelligence, that momentum will just grow in strength and strength. And that can be to solve anything in the organization or to solve problems outside as well. I think it doesn't have to be amazing, like it's not about Nobel prizes or anything here. It's about innovation, because it's thinking and looking differently.
Yeah, it's the lifeblood of organizations. It's the things that keeps your customers coming back, because they know and trust that you are going to be always thinking about how you can improve things for them, how you can make things better for them and for their customers and that whole supply chain. Imagine if we created this whole chain of psychologically safe environments that just every single individual in that chain had that sense of psychological, the innovation and the creativity and the sheer drive and growth and productivity and all of those things that mean that we would be leaping forwards in terms of how we do things and generating new opportunities and new ways of doing things and better ways of doing things. Be amazing.
Wow, makes me want to get out there and do more after that.
Stand at the street corner with a placard, psychological safety.
So Helen, if people would like to know more about you and how to find you, what's the best way of doing that?
And probably the easiest and quickest way is LinkedIn. I am a Helen Joy on LinkedIn. I'm not sure how, I've never actually checked how many Helen Joys there are, but I'm the one with the bright yellow background on my picture. So there's that, or they can come through my website, which is people-spark.co.uk, or email me directly, which is helen@people-spark.co.uk, because yeah, I am always, always happy to talk to anybody about this subject, because you may be able to tell I'm quite passionate about it.
I think that is fairly obvious. Helen, thank you so much. That was a really interesting conversation, and it's just been really good to reflect on the relationship actually between innovation or creativity or even just thinking differently and psychological safety, and how important that foundation is in all teams and organizations. So thank you.
Yeah, you're very, very welcome. And I've just remembered that there is a 45-minute talk of me talking about how psychological safety powers innovation on my YouTube channel as well, which is
okay.
Amazing. Completely forgotten about that.
But I will put it in the show notes.
Thank you so much for having me on. I always, always love talking to you. And yeah, I could talk about this for hours, but thank you very much for allowing me to share my passion for this with your listeners.
Brilliant. Thanks, Helen.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the paths we traversed on today's episode. If something rang true for you, be sure to let me know. Or maybe you can share this with someone in your life who would benefit from listening too. And if you enjoy helping others, I'd be so grateful if you would leave a review, so that people who might also be curious about their own life beyond the numbers can discover this podcast too.